Well, I'm Jeremy Rivera, your unscripted small business podcast host. I'm here with George Chavez, who's going to introduce himself, his sales expertise, where he got those chops, a little bit about his current company.
Yeah, well, thank you for having me, Jeremy. Yeah, my name is George Chavez. I'm a president and co-founder of Topaz Sales Consulting. And in one sentence, what we do is we help business owners and their sales teams sell more of their products and services, hire better, to hire the right salespeople and sales managers, and responsibly lead high-performing sales teams. So effectively equipping them to coach, motivate, and hold their people accountable. So we offer three congruent processes, and we believe when those processes are implemented properly, that's how you grow and scale an organization.
I can tell that you're in sales because you're so much prepared for that "what would you say you do here" moment than 100% of my SEOs. Sometimes when I interview SaaS owners, I can tell they've stepped into that pitching role. But there's something about that expertise, that human aspect, that experience angle that, you know, in this LLM and AI dominated age, there's still value in a human.
Huge amounts. I'm in a business owner CEO group, and I have been for over 10 years, where we meet every month. And as part of that, there's a curriculum, and they provide, and this last month was on AI. And it was about AI in sales. And as you look at AI, and we use AI to help us prepare for meetings, do client background and research to help prepare questions. And it's all very powerful. And unfortunately, the curriculum stopped at the content you can pull to prepare you. There's still someone has to execute that. So if you ask a question, what if someone doesn't answer your question? What if they're not comfortable answering your question? What if they go long-winded? How do you respond to how they respond? And what's the next question? You can't really have AI sitting there and saying, well, they just said this. How do I respond? You have to be present. Mm-hmm. You have to listen. And mm-hmm. you have to develop questions on the fly. Now, we train people to do that, but that's the human interaction that's not available through machines or others today.
That came up in my interview with Knight Lancaster. He's a CPA and lawyer in Nashville. Even though you can get transcripts from sales calls and support conversations, there's an aspect and nuance to what you might read out of a raw transcript, but you can't, AI yet, most models, they're not going to pick up on the tone of that yes when you push them, when you dropped that moment of, oh, here's the thing. And yeah. They said, yes. Was it yes? Or was it yes? Like, there's a difference in tone that humans were rigged for sound.
Yeah, I completely agree. If we entered in any longer conversation, or we were talking about developing relationships with your marketplace or your strategic partners, you would hear me say, I hate email. Email in text is a horrible way to qualify a prospect or develop a relationship. And today people are like, oh, just send me an email. Give me the questions you want me to ask. Just send me your pricing in email. It's like, the purpose of email is to schedule an appointment or to send the conversation you had, here's what we discussed, here's the documents we referenced. But everything else has to occur, in my opinion, through a conversation, a dialogue. That's the only way to build a relationship. It's a massive time saver. But this new generation, people coming up that are so comfortable with text and social media and everything is written, they miss out on that conversation, that human element. And I think it's essential for the exact reason you said. You miss tonality. And then the next question isn't really relevant when you lose that. Assumptions get made.
So a lot of assumptions do get made. There is something there that's challenging for me, because I know as a consumer, I do prefer to get like a quick call back from or a quick text back if I'm trying to schedule, you know, somebody to come out for, you know, home services, if I'm getting, you know, some work done around the house, if I'm, you know, getting some maintenance done, getting, you know, wall installed or something. There is something about my generation and younger generations that there's a distinction there to more extent, and you might have data on this, of the preference for, you know, Zoomers and younger to prefer just text messages. But I do agree with you that an email is a terrible way to communicate, and text messages, I think, for the utility aspect are great, but for long form, they're just exhausting.
They're a waste of time. Actually, hey, don't hear me wrong. I text and email. In fact, I'm trying to connect with a prospect, and we're trying to finalize an agreement right now. In the last 3 or 4 days, they're having some intense meetings at the senior leadership level to do a sales conference, and they're asking for some information. Hey, just put this in the agreement, and it's a request for training options, but we haven't discussed them yet. And there is a urgency and there's a desire, just put it in the agreement. I'm like, but then you might have questions or there may be surprises. And then can we just take 15 minutes in a conversation? Because I don't want to waste your time. I don't want to have any surprises on the back end. Surprises are not good. And all of that is a time waster. And so there's but all that's happening through text of, let's get into a conversation. Let's schedule it for this time. Let's briefly talk about, and here's the agenda. So that's all quick and on text. But to discuss the topic, a conversation would be the best time saver and the most fruitful to get to the truth of the situation. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I feel
I'm
a little
challenging
bit called
you.
Out.
Rather get the email, and you'd rather just see it in data and then think about it. I bet.
I do have that aspect, because it's a trade-off of like, okay, well, if I'm on with a salesperson, like they have an agenda, and there's time, my time and their time, but and there is something about, you know, it's in my email and I can check it. And I think I am guilty of it. And I think many more of my digital marketing generation kind of treat their inbox as kind of like a to-do action list. And if it's in the email, then it gets addressed, which is problematic, because as soon as it reaches page 2, because I get so many emails and I don't have a good system, my wife has a literal heart attack every time she sees my email window open, because I have 750 unread emails. I know the unread ones were spam. I just didn't send them away. You know, I kind of use it as like a backlog. Oh, what did I do 2 weeks ago? I had that conversation. So it's as much like a running tally of everything that I have been working on, conversations. So it's terribly inefficient, terribly ineffective, but I've been in SEO for 20 years, and I've used Asana, I've used Jira, I've used Discord, I've used Slack, I've used, Trello, I've used every single product management platform under the sun, ClickUp. They keep coming up with new ones every couple of years, and we get popular. But they never really seem to truly solve or be able to swap out, so you don't need an email, you know, or do such a good job. And it's hilarious, because like email doesn't do a good job at email. I mean, have you tried to find things in Gmail that you've emailed in the past?
I tried to find the podcast reminder today because I wanted to do a little more research. And here I'm on this podcast and I find your name and I see evangelical, former evangelical pastor. I'm like, is this the Jeremy I'm meeting with? And I'm looking for this email. You're completely right. It's not perfect. By any stretch, and people are trying to improve. Actually, just curious, all those names you listed, what's the goal of all those technologies that are being offered? What problem are they trying to solve for us? I'm just curious what you think, because maybe that it's not solving something, maybe what we're thinking, but what are they trying to solve?
I think they're trying to solve the problem of somebody else is currently getting the money for being the go-to software for a business to handle ops. So it's really that backbone ops operational workflow issue. Had this convo on, Unscripted SaaS with another, person who was who's worked on a couple of different, product process management tools. And, nobody that I've talked to that is a consultant has ever seen anybody actually fully implement any one system. You have an office manager who's hot for Trello and they bring it in and everybody kind of adopts it and most things work out of it, but there's still email in the background. Then there's a reorganization and the new manager comes in and then it's half on Notion and half on ClickUp. And, I've seen it play out dozens of different times. And I think it's because we're trying to wire ourselves and processes into this screen when we're used to being hominids banging sticks together. If you've ever been to a Mexican family's, Christmas party and they have like a tamale lineup, there's an order and there's a layout of stuff and there's somebody doing the masa and there's somebody, shredding the meat that goes into it and somebody is steaming the corn husk that goes on the outside. But we humans are wired to like do these processes together, socially. But being in front of a computer is an inherently isolating experience. It's an inherently, singular thing. So we're trying to do multiple things. We're trying to connect to other people and processes through this, text visual format that our brains kind of grapple with. These are abstract concepts, all of this ideas, this workflow, but we interact with it through this flat digital screen with text and, these UI interfaces that we've developed over time. But our human monkey brains, we have challenges compartmentalizing concepts.
I'm wired to, on the disc. Are you familiar with disc communication styles, behavioral preferences? Have you heard of that? That is an assessment tool.
Yeah, I've alongside with the, the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and then the Enneagram.
Enneagrams. Okay. Yeah.
So I'm familiar with those.
Well, the type is, high levels of urgency, a lot of inner certainty, want to make decisions, want to get things done, climb that mountain, trailblaze, all of those things. And technology is absolutely provides some huge efficiency gains. Like you said earlier, before we even started this podcast, what you were able to accomplish I think as your wife was gone for the night or the weekend, in a few hours used to take months with some of the technology. I love that. It's awesome. So cool. Do you know how much more we can get done with that? Being a thought leader and spending my entire career in sales, I also know that people buy from people they trust. Mm-hmm. And trust is about building relationships. And with all that technology, even though it's got the productivity gain, We have to find a way to build that trust with people. Now, we do a lot of Zoom, like we're doing this podcast. And where are you located?
I'm in Cookeville, Tennessee.
Okay, you're in Cookeville, Tennessee. I live in Austin, Texas, but I'm in Hungry Horse, Montana, which is just south of Glacier National Park. I'm going to spend the summer up here. And so when we can operate remote, so technology, we're on Zoom, you and I are having a conversation. So we can use technology for efficiency gain, yet still have conversations, get to see each other, get to have a conversation. Not as good as in person, but it gets pretty close. But with all that technology, I wonder when companies review employee morale, employee connectedness, all the surveys, what are they doing to make sure people are connected, like have that they build relationships? Let me go further. Just because people might live in a large city, they're so isolated because maybe their ability to connect and have conversations to open up and trust is lacking. So there's a much deeper issue there. We're very focused on the relationship side of business because to sell, you have to have trust. And to have trust, you have to have a relationship. And so we seek to build those leveraging technology. But at the end of the day, it's the relationship and it's the trust. And it's leveraging technology to the best of our ability and seeking ways to build that relationship. Hey, I'm curious, because you mentioned you're building some really cool things to help the digital marketing agencies with thought leadership content. Just you've got a lot of experience, real world experience in that area.
Yeah.
How are you helping them? How big of an issue is this for them? And how does some of the work you develop help them? Just curious.
That's a fantastic question. So nearly when push comes to shove with digital marketing experts, you know, if we take a look at their site, there's been a handful of interviews where, you know, their site is tip top and pristine. You know, most of the time if I push them on, hey, is your site up to date? When was the last time that you reviewed your homepage and actually swap things out? The cobbler's kids always are running around barefoot without shoes. It's kind of definitely an intractable problem. I took a stab at it, like you said, literally over the weekend, realized, hey, I've got 200 SEO interviews worth of subject matter expertise content. I could come up with a service offering for digital marketing agencies to offer, hey, I'll create unique human relevant content out of those expert conversations. So your agency site can have topical blogs in SEO powered by expertise and then work it in, you know, set up some additional internal interviews with somebody at that company to kind of ensure that I am saying the same things and we're kind of exploring that. But it's definitely pervasive across all of the agencies I've personally worked with. And it's not, it's because there's a sink or swim, you know, there's this moment of decision-making it for agency owners of, you know, do we pursue doing more for our clients who are paying our bills, or do we do more to try to bait the hook to get more clients? And, you know, the funny thing about a lot of digital marketing agencies is the tools that they craft that work so well for some of their clients, they don't use the same channels of acquisition for their own prospects. It does work well when, you know, you can point to a really optimized site, subject matter expertise, you know, all the things that you say that you in that, you know, that consult meeting of like, hey, we're going to do this for your site. It's very different to consistently set aside your own bandwidth for your team to continue to optimize and market your own product. You know, as the marketers often, you know, get a little busy. And there's an inverse problem there too of sometimes the lowest quality offers as far as service are matched up with the highest polish of like a digital marketing SEO campaign or what appears to a very detailed site, because they are pushing so hard on the cold outreach that has to back it up. And, you know, that's kind of the spam outreach problem, you know, the inverse law of preparedness. So it's definitely an issue. I hope to address it a little bit, but it's something that I've spotted for sure.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting thing about the cobblers. You know, they have their kids have the worst shoes or no shoes at all. We at Topaz, we 100%. Actually, I used to say eat our own dog food. Like we would, you know, everything we actually have a core value on our website that says we walk our talk. Every 100% of advice we give, we follow. And if we don't, we're hypocrites. So now instead of we eat our own dog food, somebody says, hey, our stuff is good. We eat our own caviar. Okay. So I'm into this. We eat our own caviar. I like that. So, but it's very much, and it's, to your point, people get busy. There's a lot of reasons there's excuses, but that they're the same ones our customers give. Uh-huh. And we have to be better than that. So we 100%, when we share any advice, even like one of the things we require of our sales consultants who work directly with clients is they have to carry a bag. They sell. They have to go to trade shows and conferences and meet new people and introduce themselves. Like I gave you a very nice introduction of, you know, we call it a standout introduction, who we help and how we help them. And they have to go practice it. Because that afternoon, they're going to be teaching a person who's a client of ours to do BD, who's brand new in the company, maybe even brand new to sales and may struggle with prospecting. But if we can't do it, how can we give someone else advice on it? And if we're not doing it, and then we expect others to do it, it's we have to walk our talk. And so we have a really high bar on that. But I know a lot of people... they just get busy, and we do, but we just have to become, commit and prioritize and execute. Powerful words.
I absolutely agree. To kind of change gears a little bit, I'm curious about the state of play, the difference between working with B2C sales and B2B. Like, you know, I've got an air purifier. Oxygen monitoring company that they're B2B that I'm working with. When it comes to sales, how do those suggestions differ, or how does your mindset or mentality about follow-up or follow-through shift when you're talking to your prospect is somebody that is in business and they have, you know, hierarchy above them that they might have to answer to?
Interesting, and the process is 100% the same. The tweaks will adapt based on the market. So let me give you an example. Our process would be when we meet someone new, we bond and rapport build, right? Makes sense. You try to establish and you know, find things in common and break that make that connection. And then we just simply state our intentions or purpose of why are we meeting. And we get agreement on that. So if I'm in home services and I have somebody calling and their plumbing is went out and there's something flooding, you know, in the yard, or they're having a hard time turning something off, or there's a maintenance issue. The first thing is you shake their hand and you look them in the eye and friendly greeting and hello. And hey, I'm sorry you're going through that. And hey, I'm here to just check out what's going on. You know, you put in a request and I just want to make sure we get it resolved. You mind if I take a look around and ask you a few questions? Oh yeah, sure. So now that's the attention. That could be home services. It could be a business call. Who has bosses? And then it's diagnosing what's the issue. So that's the next step. We call it uncovering pain, but it's just, what's the issue? What's your urgency? What's the priority of this urgency? What's it costing you? Things like that. So that could be a business conversation, could be a home services conversation, but what's the issue they're trying to solve? What might vary between clients, and this isn't just B2C or B2B, it could be a whole different industry. What are the questions you should ask? What are the problems you solve? And what are the questions you could ask to see if they have the kind of problems that you have that could make it go away? Once you uncover all right, they got a real issue and they're committed to solving it. Well, then other things you learn is do they have money to invest or other time or in probably homes? It's the same on investment. You may have a money thing to invest, but it also, can you be home when I come to do the work? And there could also be, are you willing to, is your spouse, let's say it's a homeowner, talking to someone else? If you want to work with me, are you willing to invest your relationship to fight for us versus someone else she might be comfortable with? Those are all investments. With business, it's time, money, resources, political capital. It's just a different investment. And then lastly, what are the other things you have to learn before someone makes a decision? Decision process, timeline, players, competition. How do you pick if you've got three competitors? Maybe somebody's at home doing home services and they got to get three bids. Well, that's very common in business to hear that. So the question is, well, how do you decide? A lot of salespeople, once they hear there's competition, well, let me just give you my proposal. Let me know if you have any questions. Let me call you. When can I call you back? That might be a business or a personal, a B2C call. Same conversation. It's almost an end. It ends the conversation as soon as they hear there's competition. Well, it shouldn't end the learning. You could still ask several questions. So I would say the process is the same. What would change would be the kind of questions you ask. And I'm sure there's a lot of other nuances. The sales cycle in a home situation or an emergency situation could be 15 minutes, 30 minutes. In business, it could be a month or 2 or 3 months. I'll add one last thing. In business, we have a lot of clients that are bidding their subcontractors. So they're part of a bigger bid. So the person they're bidding is actually talking to someone else and they're trying to win that bid. So in B2B, there's a lot of conversation of how do you stay in touch with people when the people you're talking to they don't have the data and they're waiting. And so there's a lot of relationship building and staying in touch and things like that to stay forefront of mind that may not happen in B2C. So there are some some differences there, but overall we think about the process is the process. It's pretty much the same, and it could take 10 minutes or it could take 2 years to finish it. What are your thoughts?
I'm curious if there's functionally, a difference that you guys approach, because each industry has a different, time to close. Like if you're selling agricultural equipment, that's going to be a long sales process. Like that's multi-million dollars on the line versus, a smaller dollar, prize, for each of those sales, that gets done very in a short term, because there's almost immediate, there's e-commerce support sales, but then there's also, house transactions and others. How do you approach those differently, or maybe the same, just more of the same for longer?
Here's the question. Actually, let me ask you this, Jeremy. Sorry, I'm gonna make you put on the sales hat. How would you answer this question? In order to be successful in sales, a competent salesperson has to ask for the order. True or false?
Yes.
Okay. Is it possible that if you ask for the order, you're making an assumption?
Yes.
Okay, and what assumption might you make?
That they're far enough down the funnel to be considering pulling the trigger?
100%. That they're ready to buy. So in every single circumstance, whether it's and we have a client who does indoor soccer, and they have, minimum wage college kids answering the phone that people just want to know when the next men's league starts over 30 and how much a group costs. They could give them the data, or they could follow this process and say, hey, who am I talking to? And hey, you mind if I ask you a couple questions? And hey, did you ever play here before? Like, it'll be a little bit longer. So whether it's that call or whether it's a long sales cycle, the real question is, are they ready to buy? There are people, we have clients with multi-million dollar, they're in building data centers, and that's just exploding right now. So there's not enough labor. So they're out there, and if they have a bad contractor, and they're in this data center builder is struggling to meet their schedule, it could be multi-million dollars, and they'll make a decision in a week to switch and put in another more reliable, lower risk alternative. So in sales, the question always has to be assessing their readiness to buy. What's their timeline to make a decision? And here's our favorite question. What happens if you do nothing? What if you don't change, which is the biggest competitor for everyone, the status quo? We learn that. And done properly, buyers ask to buy. So you don't have to ask for the order. And they do it when they're ready.
The status quo is the biggest competitor.
100%.
I like that soundbite. I'm going to steal that.
Use it. Who's our, in fact, you could ask anybody in any podcast you ever do, who's your biggest competitor? I suspect 9 out of 10 will tell you a name of a competitor, if they're willing to share that on a podcast. But the real answer is no change. They could be using a competitor, a real competitor, but it's not the competitor who's your competition. It's that they continue using them. No change. They do it internal, in-house. We can figure out how to optimize our SEO. ChatGPT is so good and now it can program. We'll figure it out. They've been figuring out their website for years. No change. So what's going to get them to change? That's what we ask. We find, is there a compelling reason to change? That's what we consider what sales is finding that, but before doing a proposal.
Julika Novkova, PhD, who I interviewed last week, and by the time this comes out, her interview should be out. She does business psychology, and she said, empathy is a business's superpower if harnessed correctly. Do you agree?
Sure. Here's something I say that might go along with that. You have to care. If you don't care about people, sales and relationships, you're in the wrong business. And I'm going to go, I don't say it exactly what she said is empathy is a business superpower, but I'm reinforcing it with some things that I say. So that's one is you have to care. But the other thing we share is the highest form of listening. People think it's active listening. Oh yeah, I'm going to make good eye contact. I'm going to nod. I'm going to share back. Here's what I heard you say. But there's a higher form of listening, which is empathetic listening. And what that is when you walk in someone else's shoes. You detach yourself from your own biases, your own training, your own experiences, all of that. And you just simply take the person you're talking to, you have to be present, and you have to try to look at their situation from their perspective. A lot of folks, the struggle they have is, how do I come up with questions on the fly? Because we say infinite curiosity is running out of time before you run out of questions. Well, most people, after they become adults, lose curiosity as a skill. So they can't come up with questions. So if they can empathetically listen, maybe that is the superpower, empathy, but listening from someone else's perspective, you'd be full of curiosity. Like, well, why did you do that? And what are you going to do next? And then what happens? And what if you do this? And have you thought of this? And someone's thinking, oh, that's brilliant. I hadn't thought of that. Well, because we're walking in their shoes. That's a hard thing to do, to suspend yourself from your own biases. I mean, how quickly we would say, well, if it was me, I'd do this, this, and this. Well, it isn't you, it's them. Why are they not doing that? That's a good question. Empathetic listening.
I feel that because it ties into something that I'm struggling with balancing, which is that as a marketer, we can get pretty good at knowing, you know, what buttons to push on people emotionally. But there's this this saying of like, hey, you need to be authentic, you know? And so there's a disconnect between the part of your brain that knows that you need a company to do something, but you also need them to be authentic. And that seems hard. Like, how do you take money to, like, people call it the challenge of being in sales is that, you know, you're not being honest. Like, do you actually want, like, can you actually be friendly, truly authentically, when at the end of the day, you're getting paid for that conversation?
That's a good question. Yeah. That's really a great point. And I've even had people that we train struggle with those exact words. How can I say that I care if I'm being paid to care? And so here's what I would say to that, Jeremy. Do you care? So that's really an important question. The answer to the question determines whether you feel authentic or not. So here's what I would say is people have really good authentic BS detectors. Would you agree? We can tell when someone's trying to sell us something.
Mostly.
Fair enough. That's a great point. When your words and your tonality and your body language align, you're more authentic. But what's more important than all those is your belief system. When your beliefs, your body language, your tonality, and your words are in alignment, they're congruent, you're being authentic. So we spend, in our world, in training and sales, we spend a lot of time on self-talk. And so if we're in sales and we get paid to sell, and we think, well, that's why we're talking to people, we have to rewire people's brains and help them understand this bigger thing. And it's one of the hardest things to learn, which is detaching yourself from an outcome. The goal can't be to sell. It's a byproduct of right thinking and effectively executing your process. It can't be the goal. And the reason so many people don't like or trust salespeople, and I'm included, I find them horrific big time wasters. Traditional sales: show up, throw up, convince, sell, tell, put pressure on people, overcome objections, trying to get a yes. They just got your hand in your pocket. They just want money. Those folks they have a goal in mind. They want to sell something to make money. And you could say, well, yeah, well, it's their job. There's a better way to make money. That can't be the goal. In fact, if that's the goal, you're going to sell less. What's the greater goal? It's to help people solve problems and make informed decisions. So let go of the goal of selling something and focus on aligning yourself with your client, walking in their shoes, and understanding their problem. Seeing it from their perspective, and actually being a trusted advisor where you're not trying to sell something, you're trying to see if you can help them solve it even without you. So you're now comfortable asking every question under the sun, not trying to sell, but to help them solve a problem. Through that process, people are more honest with you, they're going to trust you more, and you'll both learn a lot, whether they can solve it on their own, status quo, do whatever they were doing, or maybe that doesn't work and there's a better way. Well, hopefully, if you're the right partner, you're the better way and they trust you, so they're going to buy from you. That's the essence. But you have to let go and detach yourself from the outcome. And you have to be not seeking yeses and not seeking nos, but seeking the truth.
Mm-hmm. There was a LinkedIn thread about cognitively, there was a study that showed that if you didn't push them to the most expensive option out of your table that you have, you gain like a level of trust. Is that something that you see mirrored in your processes?
So are you saying if you don't push them to the best option, that helps? So in other words, you have a best option, but if you don't offer that, they'll trust you more thinking, hey, if you were really just trying to sell, you'd push me to the best option, but you're going middle of the ground, so you must really be trying to help me.
There's an aspect of it of like, you know, like if you like, because sometimes the best solution is just the most expensive, but having that reality of, you know, I can save you a few dollars, you know, this does meet your needs, you know, and that comes from that conversation you just talked about understanding what their needs are, you know. I don't need an enterprise level Riverside account to do this podcasting. I can get by on the pro or the business level, but you know, it's certainly a person from the Riverside sales team probably be inclined to try to push me towards that. So it's like this push and pull, yeah. Like, cause I know upsales is a thing, yeah. And getting the yes for a more complete package is kind of a push and pull. Does that come down to just whether you're, you know, an A-type personality or who's a penny pincher by nature, or is it part psychology of, I think they might have more of my interest at heart because they're not going for the gold level or pushing me real hard for it?
I could see that playing out as one element that would help build trust. That if somebody's perception is the salesperson will go for the more expensive one and you're not, I trust you more. There's a lot that occurs in a conversation, even setting up an appointment and then the conversation and then the post follow-up, whatever that looks like, that influences or impacts trust. Here's what you said, a few things. I want to touch upon them in terms of what solution makes sense. Mm-hmm. I would, in anyone we would train and what we do internally, there's one right best solution. Figure that out. And the way you do it is by asking, what is the real problem you're trying to solve? How important is it? What other problems? And there, and really it comes down to, what are they committed to invest time, money, and resources to solve? Find that problem where they're gonna spend money, and whether they buy from you or someone else, they're gonna spend money and they're gonna solve that problem. Figure out that and come up with the one best solution, and then just talk about that. And now I know some people may want alternatives. They'll want the low, medium, high. Well, if that's what they want, well then that's what they want. I would. Give them those options. Hey, this one would solve your problem. Let's go back to home ownership. We did work with a home services company for a long time. And so a lot of B2C sales. Let's say the pipes need replacing. They got a plumbing leak, but then of course the cross sale option, right? Go do an inspection of all their plumbing and they find out they've got 50-year-old plumbing and in 10 years it could go. So you could offer best, hey, let's replace your plumbing. It's only $30,000, $40,000, whatever that might look like. Well, that could freak someone out who just had a plumbing leak to get hit with that. Yeah. So what's most important, and the way we would teach someone how to cross-sell, isn't to pitch a higher service. It's to ask questions to see if that higher service would solve a problem before proposing it. So for instance, let's say we say, hey, you guys are pretty young. How long do you plan on living in this house?
Right.
And you start wondering, how do you feel about, is your house an investment? How do you take care of maintenance? Like, are you proactive on maintenance or do you wait for something to leak and then call the insurance company or whatever it might be? So it's exploring what that buyer would value most and how, what they're looking for you to provide in terms of information, references, pricing options, things like that, and then give them what they are looking for. So there's not really hey, every time do all three options for this reason. It's a, hey, every time build trust with that person, learn and ask as much as you can to uncover what their issues are, and then help them make an informed decision. Solve the right problem, buying the right products and services from the right company. If you can do that all day long, I assure you, if you've got a high level of activity, you're going to sell a lot. You'll crush your goals. That is our thought. What are your thoughts about that?
I think you're right. Because if they're not even going to be living in that home long term, they don't have the anxiety, you know, like my wife and I had very different questions when we were checking out these houses. You know, yeah. I wanted to walk around in the backyard and see what, you know, Is there some weirdo going to be hanging around in what's going to be our backyard? She's like, I want this paperwork. When was the last inspection? When was the chimney last cleaned? When was this? And, A, B, C, D. And it's funny because I talked to a realtor and they're like, yeah, I have different marketing material for my A type personalities versus my C type personalities. Yeah. I've got my sheet for all the fun activities in town. You know, how close is it to the nearest campground and what restaurants are in town? And then I've got my other, sheet ready for people that, these are all the things you have to check up, because the biggest benefit to them is not worrying about it or having that peace of mind. And there are other people who are, their peace of mind is spoiled by the fact that you brought up the fact that they're going to have to repipe their house.
Yeah. You know, you just said something super powerful, which is the, so when we prepare for sales, we want to have options and information for the different types of buyers we encounter. The key is go have a conversation, build a relationship, and find out what's important to them before giving them or suggesting anything. Mm-hmm. Hey, you're buying a house. And in fact, if you've got a husband and wife and they're looking for a home, being an expert in selling homes, being a realtor, I'm not a realtor, but if I were, but I've purchased a few homes, each one has their own short list of critical things. Well, go figure out what those are before making assumptions about things they might want. You could completely waste time and blow a sale, kill trust, if you make those assumptions of thinking they buy one way and they buy another. So we would say and train on, go get your questions answered before answering all of theirs. And if they ask you a question, like you said, hey, any creepos around the neighborhood? Is there any websites you can point me to check it out? I'd be like, hey, certainly there are some websites you can check out. Just curious, did that ever happen to you before? Now I'm trying to assess the severity of your ask to really meet you where you are and empathetically listen and walk you through your shoes to make sure you're buying the right house in the right neighborhood that you and your wife will love forever. Thinking that was a great buying experience. That realtor really helped us, really understood what we needed, didn't waste our time, helped us negotiate a great deal for us. We're very happy. Now I'm going to refer that realtor. That's how we grow our business.
I have a question for you, and this applies very largely to my audience. They're either in marketing. Some of them have been SEOs for a long time. What's the best way to close the gap between what somebody might experience in a sales call and what they're experiencing in the marketing material side of things? Because I can influence what goes on the website. I can kind of influence or help structure and push out what happens on socials, but I can't control the conversations. Usually sales is, crowbar separation. It's not the same team editing and putting marketing material out there is usually a separate team from the sales team. So what's your advice for best practices to bring those two groups together?
That's a great question. I actually have some good marketing expertise to answer the question. I had the good fortune to train over 100 CMOs. Chief marketing officers. They were either former digital agency business owners or they worked for a Fortune 500 company. So that's their expertise. And I had to train them on sales. And I actually have a segment that I train. What's the difference between marketing and sales? And with that audience, I do it with fear and trembling because I am not a marketing expert. I'm a sales expert. But I brought it in front of them and they actually said this. So sales and marketing is really 180-degree opposite in terms of how what skills you need and how you may engage a marketplace. But they bridge the gap, which is what your question is. I'll share with you how they did. Traditional marketing, like when you're brand marketing, you have to make assumptions about a marketplace because you can't interview everyone. It's really a many-to-many. I'm talking to a broad industry or market, and I'm telling, I'm educating, I'm making assumptions, I'm being a shiny object, come check us out, we're great, we're amazing, look at all we do, with the goal of marketing is to pique curiosity. sales done the way Topaz, we call salespeople buyer facilitators. They don't sell, they help people buy. They facilitate the buying process. Sales done properly, once you have people's interest peaked, you stop marketing, you take your marketing hat off, you put on your sales hat, and instead of telling and educating, you ask questions, seeking understanding. Instead of making assumptions in sales, you make no assumptions. Instead of saying, come check us out, we're great, in sales, we have the mindset of, we're not for everybody. So it's a switch. Now, here's where it comes together, and this is what the marketing, those CMOs said. The way they're marketing today is really more like the way we would buy or facilitate. Rather than educating and providing information, they ask questions to pique curiosity. And the questions are tied to the pain that buyers experience in their market. So rather than, hey, let me tell you about all of our SEO services and how we can make your website look better, we might ask, do you feeling is a pain word. Do you feel that your website is optimized and you're reaching the right market? That would be a marketing statement, but it's brief and there's a question and it's trying to pique curiosity, but you poke on the pain. You poke on the problems that you can make go away. And so they saw marketing going from a macro level to a more personal level, from a let me get a brand to let me create engagement, because we're all about engagement. So that might be a bridged gap. Does that make sense?
That definitely does. Is there some best practices you can suggest of, you know, cross-pollination meetings between sales and marketing teams, like recording, you know, looking to see if you can get your hands on transcripts from sales calls? I always have tried to do this in my consulting side when I work with a small business. If they have a sales team, see if I can get access to try to understand, you know, because if there's a particular pain point, then I want to write about it. I want to support and be able to give you, you know, a already generated answer, a blog post. That way, when you're having that sales conversation, you can lay down, oh, yeah, we threw down an excellent article on that, because having that prepared shows we already knew this was a problem. We already knew that was a pain point. We have some, if you're wanting that information, you just want to know, then we got you. It kind of shows that you're an expert in that. And that's easier to do if you understand better the pain point that is driving to that sales conversion point. Because for a lot of SEOs, unfortunately, our tracking stops once the form is submitted. And right. I think that that's... we often get brought in this weird sort of, or I'll say it this way, in the past, SEOs have been kind of brought in as a kind of this niche specialist, and our range is everything in the universe comes to the website and then we stop. It's a lead. And then, like, I don't, did somebody call him back right away? I don't know. Did that end up turning into a sale? I don't know. Was that a fit for the product that we're selling this season? I don't know. Did the salesperson like that lead? I don't know. Like, there's so many black hole situations where I've consulted and I'm like, let's push back. Because I remember distinctly one consultancy, I was so excited. I was like, we increased leads by 300%. And I had this whole slide deck prepared, went in, and the sales team, like, before I could open my mouth, they're like, this month has been the worst dog poop we've ever experienced. And I was like, what? They're like, yeah, these leads, we got three times more of them, but we closed one third of them. They're the totally wrong audience. They don't have the budget to buy this thing that we need to sell. I'm like, I could have used that information 3 months ago when we kicked up. You didn't, you know, that information, like, I was humbled, because what I thought was a pillar of success, it was like, I had a whole deck built around it, but the feedback wasn't there from the sales team, because just because you have more leads doesn't mean you have more sales.
We're in the we're deep, deep, deep into everything you're describing. I think as we set up this podcast, we do a lot of marketing. We've been doing organic marketing for several years, just creating blogs and content and getting our website SEO compliant and caring about the headers and all that kind of stuff. But with our own internal skills and with one partner, in the last 6 months, though, we've heavily invested in marketing, where we've got SEO experts that are optimized websites. They can even write code and do all that fancy stuff, but they can get our website set up. We also we have a person who uses technology and is helping us create the funnel for LinkedIn ads, where we have a very targeted message to a very targeted group. So we did research to find out what are the hottest topics to talk about in LinkedIn today for business in our domain of sales. It happens to be sales hiring is pain all over the place. So we target those. We originally started with just CEOs, who's our target market, is the business owner under $100 million in revenue, privately held. So we started, and then based on using technology, we can see who's interacting with the content. And then the ones that are interacting most, we can then do a post. We can do an ad where we'll actually do the ones that get the best organic touches. We'll do an ad. The person who's using that technology and helping us create these leads and getting the posts out there is meeting with us once a week to review how we're engaging, how many leads, but really, how did we respond to those leads? Now, we also have, here's the secret sauce. And Jeremy, I feel for you because, and I don't know how you, why, I hear some suggestions, but it might be taking time. The best, so there's a third person now, the content writer. We used a marketing firm to help us. And the challenge was they don't know our business to the degree we do. So it was, so you have to invest time to learn and walk in the shoes of your customers in their sales group and into their customer's mind to be able to tweak the content in a relevant way. So you have to close the gap as a third party to almost be an extension of their team, but you have to hear the marketing side. What problems do you solve? What pain is your customers trying to solve? And you're the expert writer or the person who can put it into a narrative that the market, that's SEO friendly, that's thought leadership, but's relevant to the market. You have to invest. At Topaz, we happen to have a guy who's a sales consultant on our team who does fulfillment and has a knowledge of all of our tools and processes. He's also an expert SEO writer in LinkedIn. So we now have that first-person narrative expertise, write the content. So the team is our sales director, our marketing writer, and then this third-party marketer who's doing all the technology stuff, and they meet every week, reviewing what conversations are you having? How many leads did you get? What's the quality of those leads? In fact, this goes on throughout the week. We got an email over the weekend. This guy's in Poland, this guy we work with. He's like, hey, is this a good lead? But that was his, he's the tech guy. He's the one figuring out how to get us more leads. And he's asking questions. Is this a good lead? And only we would know. I mean, he's learning over time, but that ongoing regular dialogue is essential. And unless there's a first person narrative person to write the content, if you have to develop it, the more time you can spend. Now, if you're working with clients that are too busy, you're at a huge disadvantage. Mm-hmm. You won't be able to write that content. I don't know if that's really an ideal client. Marketing is a tremendous amount of work, time, investment, and it's changing every single day. So you got to pick a partner you trust who's all into learning your business, who's going to dedicate the time. Now, that might come at a price. But what's the status quo? What's the alternative? If you're not getting enough business, what other options do you have? So anyway, I'd have that whole sales conversation. But that's how I would close the loop. Regular conversations, have those sales insight into the sales conversations, and then try to create content from first person narrative to the best of your ability. And then just keep talking. How are we doing? Is this right? Do we need to change? Do we need to change? Keep asking that question. Could go on for 3 months, 4 months, 6 months till you dial it in, and then stay at it. Don't stop.
to kind of wrap up, I'm curious if there's a question that you wish people would ask about sales because it opens so much understanding or opportunity.
It's a great question. I don't know if anyone's asked me that question. I have to think about this one. A question that people would ask about sales. What do I wish they would ask? Here's one I'm going to stick to a specific vertical on sales, and it's around sales hiring. One of our biggest challenges is in sales is the solution we provide for sales hiring. There's not a lot of competition. In fact, very little that I know of that solves that problem. You either go to a recruiter or you use the same internal processes that you use for hiring all other positions. But recruiters only get you candidates. They can't help you. They don't make that informed decision to buy who to hire. They provide candidates. And those internal processes are horrible when it comes to sales. Salespeople, if you use that same process, they're too clever. They'll tell you what you want to hear. Their best sale is at the interview, and then they can't sell. The problem, I wish somebody would ask us, and I think 95% of the companies on the planet struggle with hiring salespeople. I wish they would ask why. Why are we struggling? What are we missing? And what they're missing is they don't have a sales hiring process that screens for sales competence or sales management competence and a good culture fit. That they just don't have one. They don't learn if someone can sell. Very few actually do a role play in hiring. It's like, can you imagine hiring a salesperson who says they can sell, maybe sold in your industry, but you never really learn how they sell? Well, that's part of our process. And I can't tell you how many people say, oh, I ask questions. I have a consultative approach. I'm curious and I'm a great listener. Then we actually have them do a role play where they got to sell in the interview process. Not a single question asked. Poor listening. And then they get a little bit perturbed when you challenge them on something they said in previous interviews. In that interview, you find out humility and coachability are right out the window. And they just don't know that should be in the process. They don't ask, what am I missing? So it's I would love that question. What am I missing? And they really care to find out, and they're really going to do something about it. That would solve so many hiring problems that people have, but they just don't know what the problem is, and there's not enough noise out there. There's not enough solutions out there for people to know that's the problem. They just don't know what they don't know. So that would be a great question.
Love that. As kind of wrap up here, as a final opportunity, you step into the elevator with us. Tell us who you are, what you do, and where we can find you online after this interview is concluded. I'll make sure to add any links to your site, to your services in the show notes, but elevator door opens now.
Topaz Sales Consulting works with business owners to build revenue-generating machines. We help them sell more, hire better, and responsibly lead high-performing sales teams. You can find us at our website, topazsalesconsulting.com. We have a plethora of tools and resources to help you. And if you're interested in having a conversation, go to our contact form and just request a conversation, and you can talk with one of the members on our team.
Thank you so much for your time, George.
Excellent. Thanks so much, Jeremy. Take care.